revolutions happen in ways that you do not expect. They happen in ways you do not expect because Marx, having studied capitalism and imperialism, assumed quite correctly that the revolution should happen in countries with advanced productive forces. Marx suggested that as capitalism develops, the productive forces, the impact of social production, the ability to build vast amounts of social wealth, that those productive forces will come into a clash with the social relations of production, with private property. Private property will be found to be limiting to the ability of capital to expand and do great things in the world. That limit to capital by private property will break asunder. A revolution will happen and socialism will emerge. That was Marx's very important theoretical understanding, that revolutions happen through a process of human evolution, development, and struggle altogether. That class struggle is the motor, but in fact, productive forces need to develop sufficiently for social production to come into a clash with private property. History showed us that Marx's vision was not able to be realized. There was no revolution in the United States, an advanced industrial country which since the 1870s and 80s had one of the largest economies in the world. There was no revolution in Great Britain, the center of the imperialist world at the time of the 1880s to the 1940s. No revolution in Britain. There was no real revolution in France after the attempted Paris Commune of 1871. After that, the workers were not able to take even a city in France and create a socialist world. There was no revolution in Germany that succeeded. There was an attempted revolution in 1918-1919. It was put down. The advanced capitalist world was not able to move through the theory of Marxism to produce a revolution. Revolutions happened in the poor parts of the world. The first workers' revolution to in fact establish a workers' state was the Bolshevik Revolution of October 1917. Now, you'll say, well, that's an advanced. No, that was a backward part of the world. And this is why the importance of Lenin comes into our theory. Because Lenin takes Marx's understanding and he suggests that the reason you're not going to see a revolutionary breakthrough in the advanced industrial countries is that the workers in the advanced industrial countries have a problem. The workers face their own complicity in imperialism and the immense repressive apparatus used against them by the wealth generated through imperialism. Don't forget that it's not that the workers didn't try to make a breakthrough. In Glasgow, Scotland, there was a Glasgow Soviet set up, crushed by the immense repressive arm of the British state. There were revolutionary attempts in the United States, crushed after World War I, from the 1919 St. Louis crackdown over the so-called race riots, and so on. Number of attempts took place in Western societies, advanced industrial societies, but these countries, with the wealth of imperialism, had built a remarkably efficient repressive apparatus, and the state would not give. It would not collapse in the face of the workers' uprising. Germany's revolution in 1918 and the crackdown, which by the way, a crackdown engineered by a social democratic government.
Yeah.
Now here's a funny thing. Years ago in India, I was at the May Day bookstore in Delhi, and I received an invitation to speak at an event which was co-organized and co-funded by the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung, the RLS, and by Friedrich Ebert Stiftung. So I received a joint invitation with their two logos on top of the letter. I put the invitation down, I took my comrades to Dhanwa and we went for a walk, got a pond, spat all over the city and discussed with him, what should I do? This invitation has come, so opportunity to go there and speak some of our nonsense, should I go? But then I had a clarity. I came back, I typed them a response and I mailed the letter. I didn't email it. I wrote them back and I said, you know, I'm very grateful you invited me. It's an honor for me. The German Parliament, you know, is funding a talk which I'll give. And in fact, it was partly the first part you speak there, then they were going to take to Germany and so on. Good opportunity, I said, but I have a problem. I can't come and speak at a platform which is funded by Rosa Luxemburg, one of the great revolutionaries of the 21st century, and by her killer, Friedrich Ebert, who sent the orders for her execution, and she and Karl Liebknecht were killed. In the advanced industrial countries, the repressive apparatus was immense, and that held back the possibility of a revolutionary advance. So all the revolutions from 1917 onward took place in relatively backward countries in terms of economic development. The Russian Empire was an empire. It was not merely the little parts that were in Europe which had some industry, but it was a massive country that went all the way through Central Asia, which had people from first Chechnya and Dagestan on the east, on the western side, all the way out to Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, up into Mongolia. So that entire empire, where there was in colonies within the empire, had suffered from all kinds of uneven developments of its own. That a revolution could happen there, and that a place with extremely low literacy rates could raise the literacy rates in the matter of a decade, was almost miraculous to political organizers in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. When even a Fabian, a soft socialist like Jawaharlal Nehru of India, visited in the Soviet Union in 1927, 10th anniversary, he said, when I traveled in the, he wrote a really interesting little book called Soviet Russia. He said, when I traveled in the rural parts of Russia, he said, the countryside looked like India, but everywhere I went, the Soviets had set up libraries, reading circles. People were able to learn how to read. They were able to learn about the developments in other parts of the world. He said, if they can do it, we can do it. 1927. 1925, young Ho Chi Minh is in France. He reads L'Humanité, the newspaper of the Communist Party. He reads about what's happening in rural Russia, peasant Russia, and he writes and says in L'Humanité that this is an incredible thing. Later, several years later, in the 1960s, Ho Chi Minh says, when I read about the Soviet Union in France in the 1920s, the sun came in the sky, a big red sun. And I was motivated to believe that if they can do it in peasant Russia, we can do it in peasant Indochina. Russia, 1917. Mongolia, 1919. Vietnam, 1945. China, 1949. Cuba, 1959 and onwards. Every one of them extremely poor countries. Not one advanced industrial society till today has made the leap to socialism, not one. And the interesting thing is, in each of these experiments, from Mongolia 1919 onward, none of the people who have actually taken power believed that they achieved socialism. You know, it's very interesting. And this is how these societies get criticized. People say the day after the revolution, this is not socialist. You have failed. But what are you judging? Based on what theoretical apparatus are you judging a country the day after seizure of power? What is the basis of judgment? Firstly, you're making a category error. A revolution is not an event. A revolution is never an event. A revolution is a process. When Marx published his Critique of Political Economy in 1859, Engels wrote umpteen reviews of it with pseudonyms because nobody else was reviewing old Karl's book, Freddie Engels. In one of those reviews, Engels said something sparkling. He said, history doesn't move in a straight line upwards, from bad to better. It doesn't. You see, Marxism is always accused of having some progressivist idea of history. As if we believe that when you go from, say, slavery to communism, it's a straight line. We never said that. We just said human history moves from slavery to communism. But we didn't say it's a straight line. We know that it's going to communism. It's inevitable. It's impossible not to. You know, it's what Marx and Engels wrote in the Communist Manifesto. Either we have socialism, or we have, as they said, the common ruin of contending classes. Later, Rosa Luxemburg put it in a much smarter way. Socialism or barbarism, which is basically the same thing. Engels, in one of his reviews, 1859, said that history moves in zigs and zags. Zigs and zags. There are advances, there are retreats. There are advances, there are retreats. History doesn't move in one direction. There are reversals. The class struggle is filled with reversals. We may be right now living in a period that looks like a reversal. It will turn around like this. We work hard, we turn it around. That's what happens. A revolution isn't an event. It's a process with zigs and zags.